Let me tell you about Moo.com. Promo code Drinking Bros. Gonna get you 20% off your first order over there. Did you know there's an online cannabis store that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. Whether that's the magic mind gummies for deep work and creativity, the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for the action at every turn. And touch into a full body experience over there. Listen, I love the night-night gummies, as I call them, the sleepy time gummies. I take, right now they're 15 milligrams. I cut it in half, and I take half a night. 15 minutes, dude, you are gone. I've never had anything like it. 15, 20 minutes tops, and I'm out. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, gas stations, whatever. Mood's functional gummies, though, combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. Plus, Texas Governor Abbott just said it was all right to get these shipped through the mail. He vetoed the bill down here. Thank God. So order from mood.com today. Use that promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off your first order. Everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the promo code Drinking Bros. So head on over to mood.com. Find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Don't forget to use the promo code Drinking Bros when you check out to save 20% off your first order. Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with the help of Hims. They provide access to personalized treatments so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Yeah, 3 to 6 months. That's it, kids. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow your hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of your own home. Fill out an intake form, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. The process is 100% online, which means getting started has never been more convenient. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Plus, treatment options start at $35 per month. Hims has helped hundreds of thousands of men get their confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/drinking bros. That is hims.com/drinking bros for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/drinking bros. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. Put down the water and grab a
fucking drinks.
What is up?
Yes. Oh man, yes. I don't hear someone there. I don't hear someone overweight eating into the microphone. Where is Jared Taylor at?
Well, he's Jared gone. He's here, but he has no microphone because he's eating 9 cheeseburgers right now.
Is he snacking? Is he snacking underneath the table? Where's my little hamburger?
No, but he is trying
to
make a man bun out of his kind of weird cough,
Did he grow his hair out? Did he grow his hair out over there? Is it long?
It's fucking weird.
Can you grab it by the back of the scruff from behind?
Well, any guy that drives around the Fast and Furious prom car, yeah, he has a fucking man.
I like the car. I like the car, though. I will say this. When Jared puts scotch tape around his eyes and goes Asian with it, I'm taken back to Fast and Furious 2, Tokyo Drift. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He Tokyo Drift.
Oh, that was the best one by far.
That's what I said.
All the Fast and Furious
Shane
movies,
Black
Tokyo
was
Drift
a triumph
is my favorite
that.
Movie.
Yeah.
But that's not fair. I looked the closest to Paul Walker, so that we know how I fucking go out, you know?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Find a tree about 100 yards outside your office is where you wind up. Welcome to the show, kids. Who's our special guest? We got a voice I don't recognize over there. Who is that? Who do we got?
First, we got Mr. Evan Haper, the frequenter from Black Rifle Coffee.
I'm back.
I could smell your fucking coffee beans through the phone, Evan. Welcome back. Yeah, it is always a pleasure
not
to have
coffee
you.
Coffee beans.
Oh.
Those are not coffee beans.
And our special guest, we're just going to let him introduce himself because he's a veteran in the podcast world, you know?
This isn't my first rodeo.
I know.
I know. It's weird. John Wellborn. I am a former NFL player, played about a decade in the NFL for the Eagles, Chiefs, and the Patriots. Retired in 2009 and started this little company called Power Athlete. And we travel around the world preaching the word of athleticism and training and taught a seminar for CrossFit for a long time, still do. CrossFit football is how a lot of people know us. And basically just taught a million seminars all over the globe. And
you have a podcast as well?
We do. It's called Power Athlete Radio.
All right. Well, look, I will say this. Welcome to the show, first of all. Second of all, you're with four, obviously, of the highest trained athletes in the world. You can't see me through the microphone, but I'm a goddamn specimen. I don't know if you've been out of Home Depot lately and you've taken a gander at the marble, but it's pretty goddamn close. And then you got Matt Best over there, who is a sexual nightmare of a fucking athlete for a lot of people.
Can you define what sexual nightmare means?
I can.
I really wouldn't put those two words together.
I can. Have you ever put? Have you ever put
anything?
Yeah. Have you ever put five plates on each side and then did a front squat with one arm? That's Matt Best.
I don't know if you've seen his videos. My sexual nightmare, or what I am considered, is a dick active shooter. So when I walk into a building, no one's safe from my dick. Like, that thing just picks a target and starts shooting.
That's what I'm saying, though. That's what makes you a sexual nightmare.
So what are we talking about here? Like semen? Or are we talking about, like, milky discharge, like syphilis?
No, pre-cum is on a standard, but yes, it will be actual seminal fluid.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Indiscriminate semen shooting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. John, let me break it down to you. When you're fucking a man out of dominance, just to emasculate them, that's what a sexual nightmare is. That's what Matt brings to the table. That's what Matt Best brings to the table.
So does Matt make a lot of eye contact?
He could. No. That's up to him.
We're making mad eye contact right now.
We are.
Because he has this detachment syndrome, so you don't actually feel anything. You know, so he's not going to put his eyes in you. You know, he's not going to lock eyes unless it's just for dominance. But it's
eye lock is
about love. There is no love because he's basically a sociopath. War has basically ruined him.
I stare at weird things like calves, and you're like, why are you staring at calves during sex?
Why are you staring at my ankles, bro?
What war? Was this like a war of love?
The Notebook. I was Ryan Reynolds' stand-in during
a test shot. I was actually
going
to think more like Forrest Gump, like, you know, you lost your heart in San Francisco and you were, you know, chasing a young hippie girl through the...
Let's bump it up. It's more like Tupac's Thug Passion. You know, when he's fucking you, it's Thug Passion. There's a lot of biting. It's fucking hot. They can't afford AC.
Can you give me one Tupac line?
Oh,
because, you know, if you're gonna reference Tupac, at least fucking
out on bail, fresh out of jail, California dreaming.
As soon as I step on the stage, I'm hearing Hoochie screaming. Look, my fofo makes sure all y'all kids don't grow. You motherfuckers can't be us or see us. We're
dreaming.
Motherfucking Thug Life West Side till we die. Like, I could go on for an hour, dude. Don't even test me on
you
Tupac,
know what?
Motherfucker.
It's a rare day that you can get people to drop fucking Tupac lyrics on you, but you know what? It is a good day.
Oh, good you're day. Welcome. Hey. That's Ice Cube. Dreaming. That's Ice Cube. Yeah, that's an Ice Cube lyric you just dropped. And
nailed
with that.
It. Nailed it.
With dude, that, we got some sponsors, John, who pay for this whole shit shingle to be on the air. First up.
That's fucking amazing.
You're welcome.
One, that you have sponsors, and two, that somebody pays you to put this nonsense up, but I'm fucking in, so let's multiple. Hear what you've got.
Not only that, but there's a wait list of sponsors, actually. First up is Haven Lock. If you feel safe inside your house, you shouldn't. Because most people, it takes them about 3 kicks to get through the front door. With a Haven Lock on your door, it takes fucking 50. You'll be able to text your wife, your family, your dog. If you've got an Ivanka Trump lying next to you in bed, you want to keep her safe at night. Let's say you've got a rare breed dog who's a championship breed. You want to keep him safe as well. You put a Haven Lock on that door, dude. Go to havenlock.com. They are combat veteran owned. Type in the promo code DRINKITBROS. You get 20% off the lock. That means you get the lock for $99. It's almost like you're stealing from them, which is fucking amazing.
Like Jay-Z says every episode, you got 99 problems, but a lock ain't
but
one.
But a lock, you know? Ain't one. Nice. You're wow. Goddamn right.
Fucking right.
God damn it.
You're goddamn right.
Fucking timing on this podcast is fucking off.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome for my brilliance. You know who else is brilliance you're welcome for? StrikeForceEnergy.com. The tastiest, tiniest little tin pouch full of energy in all of the land. It goes in liquors, beers, waters, any type of liquid you can name, urine, semen, pre-cum. You can put it in all of there. Get
Cock
jacked up on fucking... Exactly, dude. Exactly. You can get jacked up on energy and go and butt-fuck the world. You can look them in the eyes. You can look them in the calves. You can do whatever you want. StrikeForceEnergy.com will give you the energy you need. If you're a mom out there, maybe you just had a kid, you still got that baby weight on you, and you're feeling a little tired, throw some StrikeForce all over that belly and get fucking jamming throughout the day. Go
I'm
to
pretty
Strike
sure
Force
all of
Energy.
Salt Lake is on StrikeForce, because the way that these Mormon moms running is wonderful.
Exactly. I wish more men were like them. Nailed it. Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com. for all your energy needs, type in the promo code Drinking Bros. You get 20% off up in that mug. And they ship everything. They ship like everywhere in the entire world, which is kind of incredible. right now we got an election going on in the United States, and there's
what?
An election. Yeah,
really?
There's an election going on in South Africa too. They shipped to Cape Town, South Africa.
Pray for the South Africans. That's all I got to say. Right?
Well, South African lives matter.
Without that key country, I don't know. What
cry, freedom, cry, you know? Dude. R.I.P. Nelson Mandela. R.I.P. Nelson Mandela. But go to StrikeForceEnergy.com. They got the 750 milliliter bottle. It's got 100 squirts.
Ooh, the big one.
Yeah, the big dog.
Boom.
It's an energy squirter.
Boom.
Yeah, it's amazing. We love StrikeForce Energy on the show. Next up, we got a little company, a little home defense ammunition company called TartarusOrdnance.com. That's TartarusOrdnance.com. Go to Tartarus Ordnance for all your home defense ammunition needs. They deal fucking arms. If you need guns, they got them up in that motherfucker. If you need ammunition, they got them in that motherfucker. If you wish a motherfucker would come through your door, go to TartarusOrdnance.com. Type in the promo code DRINKINBRO. You get 10% off. Guess what? If you're teaching a tactical class and you need 200,000 rounds of ammunition, you can type in that promo code and it still fucking works.
What if you just want to order 200,000 rounds of ammunition after the election?
Yeah, you might want that.
You might want that.
You might want to hedge your bets.
Dude, we don't,
not
what?
Everybody is Black Rifle Coffee. Well, you're not going to get 80,000 rounds of Green Tip just fall off a truck in front of your office.
You're goddamn right.
You know?
Dude, only if you wanted to set it off up in this piece.
Hopefully there's no ATF here.
Hypothetically.
No, that never happened.
Hypothetically speaking, and by the way, to the listeners at home, this show is actually pre-recorded just before the election, so we don't know who won. But if your candidate did win tonight, go to warfightertobacco.com, get some goddamn cigars tonight, and celebrate the victory of the United States of America. Warfightertobacco.com is 100% combat veteran owned. It's made with Cuban seeds, hand-rolled in the Dominican Republic with tiny, tiny little fingers. I'm sure they're making 5 cents an hour, but God damn it, if those cigars aren't the best. Real men smoke cigars, they don't
smoke
hookahs. What are they rolling? They're rolling cigars.
Yeah, are they virgin foreskins?
Look, I don't.
Are they smoking virgin foreskins?
I don't
see what you did there.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what age you have sex in the Dominican Republic. Maybe it's 7. Maybe they're 8 years old and they're already a man. You know, like they're rolling cigars.
You know, I was really talking about circumcision. I don't know why all of a sudden you had to get into like pedophilia and fucking child sex.
I'm going
to
be honest.
Get your mind out of the fucking gutter.
With me, I'm like Helen Keller on this side. I don't know where the fuck you're going with this shit tonight. I feel like I'm Anne Frank. I feel like I'm Anne Frank over here hiding in a goddamn closet because I don't know where you're going. I'm trying to get some sponsors over here.
Luger outside knocking on the door.
Yeah, I'm all franked up holding a pile of dishes and I hear some people outside the fucking door and I'm stuck in the closet. But go to warfightertobacco.com, type in the promo code Drinking Bros. You get 10% off of everything in the entire store. Not only that, but they got apparel. They got some dope ass t-shirts that we were wearing at Freedom Fest. I'm a big, big fan of their shit.
You know, the irony is you're still in the closet.
Boy, I honestly, I can hear a pin drop over here and I got a microphone that can pick up anything from 100 yards away. I love you so much, but let me get through these last sponsors here. Next up, we got At Night She Cries While He Rides His Steed, the first ever romance novel for dudes. And if Matt Best doesn't make the horse noise every week, you know it's not a goddamn bestseller.
I'm not going to lie, I didn't want to do it, but I felt inclined, especially
you know what's funny?
With,
I get emails
why we're
all the
going
time.
To New York tomorrow.
I know. I get emails all the time and they're like, dude, I miss Matt Best doing that fucking horse noise, which we love. At Night She Cries is the famous first ever romance novel for dudes, the funniest book ever written. If you like Blazing Saddles, if you like Range 15, funniest book ever written, go to audible.com. It's on there, amazon.com, walmart.com, you fucking name it.com, and it's in bookstores everywhere. Last but not least, we got Black Rifle Coffee. Mr. Evan Hafer will tell us about his special little company.
Ooh, Black Rifle Coffee is a small batch, premium roast to order, veteran owned, veteran operated coffee company. We deliver the finest, freshest coffee nationally in the shortest amount of time. We do it better than everybody else. And we're fucking damn cool if I don't say it myself.
Yeah, you are, Evan.
I got a boner looking at you saying that. That was amazing.
And he does have a raging hard on, but he's had that for at least 20 minutes.
He
brushed up against me in the kitchen.
All I could hear in my head as you were saying that was this America.
Yeah, America. He brushed up against me and he's like, oh, pardon me. And I'm like, listen, that's a raging hard on.
I'm like the dude
and I don't even know why you're over here.
I'm the dude that goes to the strip club in fucking basketball shorts and no underwear when I'm around you because I know it's going to get it hard. Yeah. Might as well let it free. It's like a flagpole. Yeah. I'm posting up the flagpole to say Evan Hafer is fucking arrived with Black Rifle Coffee, and I'm drinking Black Rifle right now.
Oh yeah, you are. Right.
He's drinking coffee. We're drinking whiskey.
I put whiskey in there. Oh, you okay. Said, come on.
I apologize.
Drinking bros.
Of course, alcoholism.
Hey, well, Evan, welcome back to the show. We always love having
you.
We always love having you, John. Jeez. John, welcome to the show. We don't get too many famous NFL players on here.
I can't imagine why.
I mean, I wouldn't say famous.
So we're proud to have you. We're proud to have you. John, let's start with the early days. Where'd you go to
let's
college?
Let's not throw around those famous words at all.
Where'd you go to college? No, I mean, let's start with the early days.
I grew up in Southern California. I went to school.
Where about, if you don't mind asking?
Palos Verdes, Torrance area.
Oh, shit. I'm from Santa Barbara.
Oh. So. Okay.
Sorry to interject. That was
No problem. Cool. I graduated high school and went to UC Berkeley. Played for the Golden Bears.
Liberal.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was actually an excellent place to attend school and got a very diverse, multicultural, interesting education. So
yeah, see, you went to Cal. Aaron Rodgers went there, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So look, big time program, one of the best academic schools. A lot of people call that the Ivy League of the West. Would you agree with that?
Sure.
Come on, you got to be smart to go to Berkeley. I know that school
and liberal usually, so I'm concerned where this podcast is going.
Well,
no, I mean, not at all.
You guys have guns in here, do you?
Yeah,
absolutely not.
I don't know. I mean, let's define what liberal means. I mean,
free with your sexuality, not afraid to shave your bush. That type of you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's a spectrum. It's a rainbow of liberalism.
Yeah, it's heavy bush and Birkenstocks.
Is it a spectrum or is it a continuum? I kind of thought like liberalism is a continuum. I just hope they go out of sight. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. But
either way,
like,
did you graduate Cal?
Yeah. So I mean, I had 90 scholarship offers, and when I looked around, and I got a call from like Harvard, Yale, and some of those schools, and I remember talking to my dad. I was like, Dad, I go to Harvard, and he was like, yeah, there's no financial aid there. So, you know, you're going to get a scholarship. And so I ended up picking the best school, which was Berkeley. And I was pretty stoked I did, just from the mere fact that I got just a pretty dope education and got to, you know, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I think people kind of grow up in this idea. And I grew up in Southern California and, you know, like rich middle white class kind of deal, and get a chance to go to Berkeley. And then you really get to see all the diversity and you hear all the stereotypes and then you realize that they're all true.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at that point, I graduated. I graduated in 4 years and worked on my master's in my fifth year. And then I got drafted to go to the NFL and ended up, you know, doing that for the next decade. So
what did you?
Right. Let's start with what position you played.
I got drafted second pick in the fourth round of the Philadelphia Eagles, and I came in and started at right tackle as a rookie.
Look at that. That fourth round's that money area where you're still getting a decent amount of upfront cash. But not as rich as the first three rounds. How did you feel, and where were you when you got drafted?
I was at home. I mean, the tough part was I got all these calls from different teams that were like, hey, we want to take you with our second round pick. And then the second round went by, and I didn't get drafted. And then I got a call that was like, hey, we're going to take you in the third round, and that didn't happen. So that was when the NFL, the first day was the first three rounds. So I went to bed and was like, shit, I didn't get drafted. And then the next morning at about 6:02, I got a phone call. The phone rang, and I remember being like, fuck it, I'm not going to get up and answer it. So my brother's wife, who was there, ended up jumping up and answering the phone. And she's like, there's a team on the phone, and they just drafted you. And so I get on the phone, and they were like, hey, we just drafted you. Congratulations. And my brother turned on the TV. And
you're
like,
kidding me.
Who is it? And like, we're waiting for the draft kicker, and I'm like talking to these guys, and he's like, the Eagles. I'm like, Eagles, where the fuck is Philadelphia? And like, you know, like Juan Castillo was the offensive line coach, had come out and worked me out, and he fucking put us through this baton death march of a workout, and I got pissed off after about 90 minutes of doing a bunch of fucking, you know, dancing monkey shit, and ended up fucking taking a cheap shot and like knocking him fucking ass over a tea kettle during the drill. Like, he was holding a bag and I fucking lit it up and like knocked him down and hurt him. And ended up, my agent called me after. He's like, "I'm like, those fuckers aren't going to draft me. I fucking tried to kill the offensive line coach." Sure enough, they ended up drafting me.
He's like, "That was a really good hit."
Yeah, yeah. He was like,
"We should hire this guy."
Not only that, but I'm sure your agent was like, "Hey, you know what the NFL minimum is, right? Like, please just stick this out and not be a dick, right?"
Oh yeah, I mean, it really wasn't much of a matter of whether or not I would play or not. It was where I would go. I mean, Berkeley, you know, for all the liberal fucking nonsense that you hear about Berkeley, I mean, there was at one point like more NFL players from Berkeley, you know, than just about anything else other than maybe Florida State at one point in the NFL. So when I came to the NFL, a bunch of the guys that I played with in college were all starters in the NFL. And then you kind of measure up, you're like, wait a minute, that guy's getting paid fucking $10 million a year and getting, you know, 11 sacks. And all of a sudden I was hanging on that dude when I was playing. So it was just more of a perception of just, I just need to get an opportunity to go out there and play.
Not only that, but Berkeley itself is such a great school that if you graduate with an education there, you're still making six figures wherever you land after that. So I'm sure in your mind, you're not terribly worried, right?
General. No, I mean, I was, you know, I graduated in 4 years with a rhetoric degree, and then I was working on my master's in my fifth year. And then basically my plan was to go back to law school, and had a law school scholarship lined up to go back to Bolt. And I was, you know, just got a chance to go play in the NFL. But the problem was I didn't really know anybody that, you know, I mean, I played with guys, but I mean, how long do white dudes play in the NFL? Not very long.
Yeah.
And the average. And the average is,
did
it's
you
true.
Catch that?
I mean,
I'll only let him off the hook.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like not that many guys play. And so, you know, the average is a couple years, and I figured, shit, I'll play a couple years and I'll go back to law school. And then a couple years ended up becoming 10 years.
So
a decent career in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So after your rookie contract is up, did you sign the big money contract after that?
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles were pretty smart in that they assessed good young players and signed us to fucking, you know, longer contracts pretty early on. And I ended up coming on, started as a rookie, ended up getting hurt, and then came back in rehab, came back and started it my second year. And then in the beginning, before my third year, they ended up signing me to a long-term deal. So, I mean, that's pretty good. I mean,
what year was that, by the way?
2001.
Okay. So you were in the McNabb, Terrell Owens era,
yeah,
I believe, correct?
McNabb was drafted in the first round. I was drafted in the fourth.
Oh, shit. Same draft. What was it like on that team with McNabb and T.O.? Was it really as contentious as...
T.O. came the year after I left. I ended up getting traded. I had some contract disputes. I had ended up playing on an injury and ended up having a surgery on a Monday, and then came back and played on a Sunday. And part of their deal for me coming back to play early on a fucked up knee was that they would redo my contract. And then when the season was up, they basically told me to go fuck myself. And at which point I fucking got into a little bit of a battle with them. And then they ended up trading me to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Wow. So you missed the T.O. era. You were gone for that.
Yeah, I'm really not upset about that.
So, well, look, they went to three NFC championships back to back. And then a Super Bowl.
So
right?
I played in all three NFC Championship games, and then the year I left, they actually ended up going Super Bowl.
No shit.
I was fortunate. Yeah. So, but I mean, the team I got traded to, Kansas City Chiefs, is considered and by many to be the best offensive line to ever play in pro football, which had Willie Rofe, Will Shields, Brian Waters, Casey Wigman, and myself. So I ended up getting a pretty winning team and a pretty good offensive line, and basically getting traded for which was pretty big honor to have them trade and actually come in and start for the best offensive line probably ever.
Absolutely, look,
football.
Willie Rofe is a Hall of Famer. He was one of the best to ever do it.
Yeah, all decade team, and Will Shields first round ballot for them. Those guys are the best to ever play the game, and I was fortunate to play with those guys.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And where'd you were in New England after that? So you got a chance to play with Brady and the boys?
Yeah, no, actually my 10th year I went to New England, and I ended up getting hurt in the last preseason game. I mean, little known fact, I actually competed in the CrossFit Games.
Did you really?
Yeah, 312 pounds. I was
whoa.
The
whoa.
So the next biggest competitor was about 202. And so CrossFit hit me up about a week before the CrossFit Games and said, "Hey, you want to compete in this thing?" I was like, "Yeah, fuck it. I'll go to before training camp. I'll go win this CrossFit Games thing." So I showed up, and I think out of like 200, I finished in the 80s or something, and ended up about a week later going to play for the New England Patriots. And then the last preseason game, I ended up getting hurt. And I didn't say anything when I got hurt. I ended up chipping off a piece of bone in my knee, and I just walked off the field and said, "I'm good." And then I just figured I'd make the team, get through the first week, then say something, and then I ended up getting hit with like a, "Hey, we got to make a roster move, so we got to cut you." And I was like, "Oh fuck!" And then
look, the NFL is a business, and a lot of people don't realize that at home, where they see it on TV, they think it's all
totally a business. So I ended up getting released, and then when other teams called. And I didn't go sign with other teams. When I came back, they put me through a physical and found my knee was fucked up. And I came home and had surgery. And then that was my 10th year. And I was training to come back. And as I was training to come back and kind of like, getting ready to go fucking light it up for year 11, all of a sudden I got a phone call from one of my former teammates, a guy named Kyle Turley, who had a seizure at a bar. So he was at a bar in Nashville, had a fucking seizure. They took him out, took him to the hospital, did a CAT scan, and found out he had like pretty extensive brain damage and was fucked up. And so he called me and was like, "Bro, my fucking brain is squished. I'm having all these issues." And I went back and looked, and I have like more career starts than him. And I'm like,
"Fuck."
I'm like, "Ooh, right." And okay, maybe this is the fucking writing on the wall. And just about that time, CrossFit ended up hitting me up and seeing if I wanted to teach a seminar and going to work for this little startup called CrossFit. And I was like, "Fuck it, let's go work with these guys." And so I ended up retiring from the NFL and launching a website and started getting in this kind of brand of strength and conditioning, because I just saw a lot of bullshit out there. And I'm like, you know what? A lot of people talking about strength conditioning and training have no fucking idea what they're talking about, because very few people have ever put in a situation where you actually have to use your version of strength conditioning or your training to fucking make money and basically get to go beat fucking ass for every Sunday. So I came out and started posting my training and talking about what I did, and started a blog called Talk to Me Johnny, where I just basically started answering questions and helping people. And it evolved into a seminar and evolved into Power Athlete and all the things we've been doing. So,
I'm sure coming out of the NFL 10 years, you got a lot of confidence going in. So it's not like these little CrossFit fuckers are going to say shit to you and you're going to be like, "All right, cool. Like, well, I can still roll you."
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I respect people that fucking work hard. And what I always respect about CrossFit and the CrossFit community was that, dude, here's a group of individuals that want to fucking go train their asses off and fucking work hard every day and, fucking try to get better. And let me tell you, that type of community and that group of people, anybody who wants to get better, is I'll fucking work with them, and I'm more than happy to fucking get in there. I just don't like to work with a bunch of lazy fuckers.
Sure.
So I should not do your programming.
No, I that's kind of why we came out here, to talk about, Power Athlete and kind of my mission, which is to improve athleticism. I have a firm belief that I can basically make somebody more athletic through our training system.
Nice.
And that's kind of what Evan and I have been really talking about, is this idea that athleticism exists on this continuum. Where you start in the continuum is kind of genetics or a lot of different things. But once you're on that path, that if you understand athleticism as we do, or as I do, we can foster and really grow and develop athleticism and make you a better version of yourself.
Yeah, I think everybody has certain innate abilities with athleticism or with just like mechanics and stuff, but they're everything can be taught for the most part. I mean,
100%.
You're not going to be able to get legs like John Jones to throw head kicks, but you can still learn, you know, certain movements and things like that that can just as well be as effective.
Sure. I mean, you're talking about combat stuff. I mean, but
those across that board.
Sure. I mean, if you take a look at John Jones, I mean, I always laughed that his brothers played in the NFL and they always called him the fucking runt and the fucking piece of shit that would, you know, and he was never the athlete.
Right.
Here's a situation where you take a guy who, you know, might have been the worst of all of his brothers, and his brothers are all, you know, good NFL players, and all of a sudden you put him in an MMA combative situation, and the dude ends up fucking working pretty hard, and he's got a lot of natural gifts, he's got a lot of range. I mean, he's a fucking long, lanky dude, and just big dude. I mean, just got a drug problem, you know? Gotta stay off the fucking...
stay off that cocaine!
Fucking cane!
Fuck your couch!
So, no, it was a great experience to go play in the NFL. I mean, it was, you know, you get to go out and a lot of guys were really into it for the fucking, you know, women, money, and, you know, the fame of it. And I was just into it for the fight and for the combat and the fact that I got to fucking go beat some dude's ass and got paid money for it. So
yeah,
all of a sudden when I couldn't do it anymore and it was over, then it's time to go do something new.
I would say I joined the army for the women and the money. Right. But it was solely for shooting people.
The exact opposite. The exact opposite.
Like our first conversation, you know, we picked up the phone. We were introduced by a mutual friend, which is Baker Levitt from Hillcliff. We both had the mutual disclosure. We're like, hey, listen, I'm not really friends with Baker, but let's just
preach.
let's sit here and we'll talk. Natural perspective.
What he said was he was like, hey, I'm really, you know, like, you know, just don't hold it against this conversation that Baker introduced us. And I was like, oh my God, you're like the seventh person I've met that's used that exact same line.
And Baker's a great guy. Like he's a fantastic character. You know, one of the first things that he said was like, hey, I was there for the violence. So if you got a lot of football questions, I'm like, dude, I haven't seen a football game in like, since I was like 12. So I was there for the violence too. So it's a common ground. So a lot of the things that we were talking about today, we spent like all day in the Black Rifle office. John's a wealth of knowledge and he fills in a lot of gaps where one of the things that we really talk about, and you know, Softfleet was one of the sponsors, and John knows Brent and all those guys from Softfleet. And we talked about the athleticism piece, right? So what I'd like to hear more about is like this closed circuit versus open circuit. You know, how you define that, and hopefully, you know, we can pull out some of these definitions and then talk about developing athleticism, because I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it really started with just kind of an observation that very few people had actually ever defined athleticism, because it's almost impossible to define. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can watch somebody do something and instantly know whether or not they're athletic. But yet putting into words and really, you know, creating a definition around it, and I knew that to develop athleticism, I had to define it. And so just through a lot of conversations with some really fucking sharp people and just my own observation, it's, you know, we defined athleticism as the ability to seamlessly and effortlessly combine primal movement patterns through space to accomplish a known or novel task. And then based off of that definition, we could go back, pull out pieces, and start developing athleticism based off of that definition.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, yep. And we talk about like these closed circuit tasks. So define a closed circuit task.
So closed circuit really is defined as movements that have defined starts and finish. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is exact muscle memory. So you become the master of the mundane, and you know it's basically known tasks. So closed circuit would be Olympic weightlifting, golf, from sporting deal, powerlifting. You know, where you know exactly gymnastics is a closed loop, and you know. There's no surprises at this thing. It's your ability to execute these movements.
It's a specific task, right? You're not necessarily having to adapt to something else, like a dynamic situation or something like that.
Yeah. So that's that known task. Right. Yeah, like specific known. So, I mean, for example, if a girl's going to get up on a balance beam and she's going to go out, she knows exactly, she's rehearsed her routine. She knows exactly what she has to do to execute it because she has rehearsed it. It's muscle memory. You know, she knows exactly. It's not as if somebody's going to run off the fucking crowd and spear her as she goes into her rotation.
Which would be way more entertaining.
Way more entertaining. 100%. Well, it's the same thing. Like when I would look at boxing and Muay Thai and stuff, you see guys on pads and and on hitting the bag. They're like, wow, beautiful technical strikers, and then you throw a jab back at them, and they're It's well, a shit show. They look like a fucking 2-year-old out
that's
there.
That's the difference when you transition from the closed loop to the open loop, right. where now all of a sudden there is no start and start to find, you know, right. Beginning and ending. You know, you don't know what's going to happen at you. You know, it's you know, there could be a million different variations, and you're, you know, everything happens. So, I mean, if you think about, like, for example, like basketball is a good example. The free throw. So, like, hey, I get, you know, fouled and I want to do a free throw. That's a closed loop.
Right.
But yet the game of basketball is open loop. So you have different, you know, both the variations.
So it'd almost be like a one night stand taking a girl home. I know in closed loop, I'm going to have sex with this girl. Now, how she reciprocates, especially if alcohol's involved. You know, if she goes to choke me, I might have to kind of reverse her, pin her.
Yep. No. Exactly like no, that. Nope. No. It's actually exactly like that.
It's exactly like that.
So exactly like that.
I will write your forward for your netbook.
When you go home with the one night stand, it's open loop because you don't know what the fuck is going to happen.
No, but you still
now have if you go home with your wife, there that's a closed loop where you know exactly what's
going to happen. Well, no, because I practice my hip thrusts, my
goddamn
my
right
tongue,
you do.
My tongue rotations.
Yep, well, then that is all. Then those are all your closed loop environments.
Right. But I'm applying those in an open loop space.
Yeah, well, the open loop space would be her doing after a bunch of drinks getting crazy.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. But what Matt is doing is he's thinking locally, but he's acting globally on shit like that. And that's what I love about him.
It's like Al Gore.
Yeah.
It's like a tactical Al Gore.
Exactly.
I'm just trying to use your wealth of knowledge and make it applicable to my personal life. You know?
Yeah, why not?
You
know,
any way I can offer you knowledge in terms of being more effective in the bedroom, I'm fucking in.
I just want to digress one heartbeat on this, which is like, tell me the story of the police cruiser.
The police cruiser?
Yeah. Tell me the story of the police cruiser that you bought.
Did Jared wake up underneath the table?
We have to hear this.
So when I the last season I played in Kansas City, I ended up getting off the airplane and, you know, come out of the you know, fucking airport. And if you've ever been to Kansas City, airport's pretty small. One of my buddies was supposed to pick me up. Of course, he flakes, and this is pre-Uber and all that shit. So I'm like looking for a cab, and all of a sudden I see that there's a government auction of vehicles going on in the center of you know, Kansas City airport. So I'm like, I'm in. I walk over and I ended up buying this black and white cruiser for like $1,800, retired police car. And I'm fucking mobbing in this thing and didn't register it, no insurance, and basically mobbed around in this piece of shit for the rest of the season. And what we would do is late at night, we'd get in the car and fucking tail people around at night. And people would lose their fucking minds all of a sudden, like, you know, you get in like real close behind them. They know it's a fucking cop car. It's got the bumper on the front. It's got the fucking white door. And we just fucking get in real close and people go like instantly like changing their shit and doing a bunch of stuff. So it was pretty funny, dude. And it was, you know, and then when I left Kansas City, I just fucking parked it in the parking lot, left the keys in it and walked out and fucking put my bag and literally walked away from it.
So whoever you are in Kansas City that has that vehicle, you're welcome.
Yeah.
It probably got towed.
And who's the dude that had the driver that you'd like?
Larry Johnson ended up signing a big contract.
Johnson was a beast, man.
Yeah. And then he got paid and then he fucking, you know, forgot how to run, but he ended up getting paid and the next day
one of the greatest fantasy football players of all time, by the way, Larry Johnson.
So when I played for the Chiefs, I mean, with Larry Johnson and Priest Holmes, I mean, dude,
dominated.
We set some NFL records that have never been broken. I mean, I think we scored like 7 rushing touchdowns in the first half on the Texans.
Fuck yeah, you did. Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson were going 1-2 in every fantasy football draft across the nation. You guys are the best O-line in the biz.
Tony Gonzalez and
sexy team.
Best tight end in history. Yep. And, you know. Fucking T. Rich at fullback. I mean, one of the most stacked offenses.
Sexy team, but you guys couldn't win in the playoffs. Why not? Is my question.
That last year we go to the playoffs and we're playing the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, you are. Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's at the helm. The sheriff is at the helm.
And the problem was Willie Rofe ended up getting hurt and not playing in that game. And they had a young offensive tackle guy named Jordan Black come in and. You know, Jordan was, you know, hadn't been playing that season. I mean, he was Willie's backup, and they asked him to come in there and fucking block Fright Night Dwayne Freeney, you know, in the very first playoff game in Indianapolis on the turf. And, you know, they fucking basically throw a guy in there and playing wet left tackle, so much so that.
You guys got housed, right?
In the second quarter, I'm standing there and I was playing right tackle. All of a sudden, I see my backup come running on the field. And I'm like looking at it. I'm like, me? And he's like, no, I want you to go play tight end. and they ended up playing me at tight end on the left side.
You're fucking kidding.
And I hadn't played tight end ever in my life, so they just said, hey, we need you to go block him.
You guys got killed that game. What was the final score?
I can't remember, dude. I couldn't tell you a single fucking score.
It was a big boy number, though. It was like 40 something to seven or something.
They fucking slacked us, but it happens.
Yeah, no, it does happen because the NFL is like that. I mean, it is. Look, you lose your best guy, you're going to get housed, and that's just them's the rules. Yeah, There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, Dwight Freeney on the turf in his prime was just one of the scariest individuals. And for a guy who hadn't been playing, I mean, that's like fucking, you know, you guys like all of a sudden taking some dude who's never been there and just being like, grab your shit, let's fucking go, and I need you to be a fucking warfighter. I mean, it just doesn't happen over
there. Yeah, and hey, I mean, you know, Freeney's still playing today. Freeney's still playing today, right?
Yeah, you build competence and you build, technique, and you learn to fucking do that job under stress only by doing that job under stress, and basically throwing a guy in at the end of the season is a fucking bad deal.
Yeah, and Freeney was with the Falcons either right now or last season. Freeney is still in the fucking game, surprisingly.
Yeah, he's a beast, dude. He was. Beast. I mean, at one point, he was one of the scarier people. I mean, they called him Fright Night for a reason.
Yeah. So let me ask you this: what's one of your craziest stories from the NFL? Because I'm from Atlanta. I'm a diehard Falcons fan. I've heard some crazy stories about Brett Favre before he got traded to Green Bay.
Like, what kind of crazy stories? Like on the field, off the field,
both. But so I'll lead you into this. Because a lot of people ask me, oh my God, Brett Favre, one of the greatest players of all time. You're a diehard Falcons fan. How can the Falcons trade him? The story I heard was he was getting fucked up at strip clubs all over Atlanta. He showed up drunk to the stadium because he didn't know where his house was, slept in his car, and the offensive coordinator woke him up the next morning at 6 a.m.
No, that's not really a big deal. I mean, we did that on several nights.
Exactly. Yeah, what's your craziest story?
I can remember more than one occasion actually driving from the bar to the facility and parking in the first spot so that I wouldn't be late for meetings.
That's exactly what happened to Brett Favre.
That's not unusual. That's called being responsible.
Exactly.
Now, if he went home and fucking slept through his alarm.
That's what I
you
say.
You know what? I'd say he was being irresponsible. No, that's just responsible. No,
he was ready to show up for work. He might have had a giant hangover. The condom was still on his dick.
Yeah.
He was there to get the work done.
Well, exactly. You know, I think where Brett kind of fucked up a little bit is I think things got past him a little. Like, he forgot kind of who he was, and I think he tried to go into this technology age. Like, all of a sudden, he was, like, you know, sending dick pics to that one girl.
Right.
And, yes. You know, I mean, the reporter.
I think she worked for the team, but, I mean, that was the chick that you used to see in all the Florida State. If you Google, like, Florida State hot chick fucking football dude, she was, like, the chick in the cowboy hat showing all the cleavage, and so she got a job and went over to the Jets, and Brett fucking rolls in, and this is fucking Brett Favre. This is NFL royalty, and you know what he's thinking? I'm going to send this bitch a dick pic, and you know what? I'm going to slay this young broad.
We talked about them on the podcast before. In 2016, I don't care who the fuck you are. Like, I am a nobody, and I can't – the second I send out a dick pic, especially to someone that's I'm not long-term dating – that shit's going public real fucking quick.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not a nobody, Matt. You're not a nobody. You're a somebody. You're a somebody, Matt.
Every dick pic Matt has ever sent me.
Well, what's so awkward is you just sent me one and we just met a few minutes ago.
I know. I log them. I log Matt's dick pics.
Where I'm going to actually just take naked photos and release them on myself so that way no one can blackmail me. Like,
well, the calendar. We're going to do a calendar.
Isn't that how Kim Kardashian became famous?
Pretty much. She got eaten out by Ray something.
Ray.
Some fucking rapper.
Yeah, and now she's fucking Kardashian. Billionaire. Yeah.
That's how I fight it.
I honestly, Kim Kardashian? About 6 months ago, I was like, why the fuck is she famous? And I actually put into Google, why is Kim? And as soon as I fucking put why is Kim, it came up famous. And I hit it, and it was like she was famous for getting fucked in that thing.
And just kind of how Paris Hilton became famous.
Yeah. If you put in, it was fucking unbelievable.
First gained media attention as a friend and a stylist of Paris Hilton.
Oh, Ray J.
Oh, boy.
And a sex tape with her and former boyfriend.
Do we need a sex tape to maybe up our pop culture?
Yes, Matt. We need a sex tape of you.
Homeless cream pie.
Yeah.
Homeless cream pie.
We need a sex tape of you and Chelsea Clinton.
Do not go down that fucking rabbit hole.
Chelsea Clinton?
We've been
there. Why not?
Oh, bro, I'm down. I will fuck my way through the Clinton family.
I'm into gingers, man. I'm into gingers.
Let's do the opposite, man.
Wait, I'm married. Hold on.
I'll stick a cigar in Hillary in the Oval Office. hashtag fucking.
She's in Ohio.
She's not going to get in. We don't know yet. We don't know yet. We're pre-taping this.
She's into chicks. Everybody fucking.
No, I know we don't know, but we're live feeding right now.
Exactly. Hey, Evan. And since we are live feeding, Matt, let me ask Evan something. I just watched the Wiener documentary on he's obviously married to Huma, her top aide. Is that her fucking scissor sister partner? How does that relationship work in your mind?
I think so.
That's what I think, right? Yeah.
Dude, I don't know. I actually do not know.
Huma's hot.
How long is Huma's her assistant for?
I know that
20 years.
20 years.
Yeah, 20 years.
And I don't know if you guys have seen the political breakdown of what her associations are.
Yeah,
with.
It's fucking insane, dude.
It's
like her mom is like the head of like I think it's like the Islamic Woman's Right paper, which is owned by like all of these different
Saudi Arabia.
Oh, but it's what's the terrorist organization that hates Israelis? Is it Mossad? No, it's
the Saudis own the Quintons lock, stock, and barrel.
Well, like, I mean, I think it was like the king of Qatar paid $12 million to have tea with Hillary, and they never showed. Yep. So. Right.
So it's like they're for sale. Everybody knows they're for sale. I mean, the Clintons are quite possibly the biggest political whores in history, outside of like Grover Cleveland, which who knows Grover Cleveland except for Evan, right? So, but yeah.
Well, isn't that his code name on fucking Tinder?
Yeah, I think
Grover
so.
Cleveland.
Hey, that is a who good, knows that is
the
a good
we're like second. We're second phase of the Gilded Era, right? So it's like
Well, the insane part is
everything's for sale.
Is
fuck
actually
it.
After Hillary wins, we're not gonna be able to put out this podcast because all of
whoa,
we're gonna get rolled. We're rolled the fuck up. No,
exactly. We're in mid election right now. We're recording this on election night. We don't know.
Matt Best is gonna have an accident. He's gonna fall off a fucking waterfall.
Goddamn right.
What the fuck? I've never even known Matt to go to a waterfall. What the fuck is he doing hiking?
Whatever he wants. Whatever the fuck
it was. Weird.
Whatever he wants. He's Matt
Kodiak.
Goddamn it.
In downtown Utah.
He was eaten by a cement crocodile.
Hey, I fucking tried.
Cement Australian crocodile that drug him to the bottom of the fucking goddamn ocean.
I'm cool with it. I literally always have a gun on me, and I go three places: my home, the gym, and my office. And we're really bad. I don't go to the
your
bar.
Your pattern of life is so predictable.
I know, dude.
Jeff Kirkham told me.
If I was
me,
marking
like,
you, I mean, dude, you know?
Jeff Kirkham told me, he's like, Matt Best's pattern of life is too predictable. I've been watching him waiting.
Where's he going tomorrow, Evan? Where's he going tomorrow?
Hold on, what?
Did he really say that? Because that's actually funny.
He's like, I have a
where's he going tomorrow, Evan? Where's Matt Best going tomorrow?
I've gotten several calls from, shall I say, suitors of business.
Okay, where am I going tomorrow?
Where are you going tomorrow?
Your house and then
God
the
damn,
gym
I
and then the office.
He's going to New York tomorrow. But I already know what's set up on
that. Right? That's true. You don't know where I'm at?
That's
come
true.
At me, bro.
Yeah. You don't know where he's at, but he is.
Why
are
you mad, bro?
Why are you mad?
Why are you mad, bro?
Because Rossi P and I are going to write the greatest book of all time.
Of all time. Dude, of all time.
And I'll tell you what, I'm going to market it.
I know. Yes. I appreciate that.
Yes.
So
New York is going
to
be
back to John and back to Luke.
Absolutely.
Back to John, back to Luke.
Absolutely.
Okay. Shifting it back to John, back to Luke. So we're sitting in my office. We're talking, like talking till our fucking eyes bleed, actually, right? But it's a fucking really interesting conversation. So we have to go back to like this cornerstone of like why we do what we do, right? And we really were introduced once again by Baker Levitt. We were introduced, fucking fantastic human individual, right? Fantastic guy. But ultimately, what we're talking about is going, okay, so you've got all these closed loop tasks in the tactical industry.
Sure.
You've got the draw stroke, you've got shooting, blah, blah, blah. You've got a million different closed loop tasks. But what I spent the last 2.5 years doing was this scenario driven, which is mainly an open loop. So there is no end to quite possibly the problem that you have to solve with a continuous closed loop scenario, right? So you might have 100 different little tasks. Skill level task one, that's what we call it in the military. Task that you have to string together in order to solve the problem. And John, what John did was he was telling me, okay, really you can develop athleticism. So what I want to talk about for at least 5 minutes is just the fact that everybody in the soft community, they're not athletes. And people automatically assume, like, okay, well, these guys are athletes. Okay, they're strong, they can endure pain. However, by a definition of agility, or at least your definition, a lot of these guys, man, they're really not athletes. They're not. Well, they're not athletic. Yeah, like, they're athletes. They're non-athletic. I should say.
There's a distinction between athlete and athletic, and I think people make that confusion. It's just like you can be an athlete but not athletic, and just like you can be athletic as shit and not an athlete.
Right.
So, I mean, kind of that, people have loved to have somehow linked the words athlete, tactical, and warrior together.
Right.
And those words are just fucking buzzwords. And unfortunately, they don't really fucking go together. Because if your program is not working to actually, challenge and test and foster athleticism, then it's fucking stale. And I think the problem is at least in the, tactical world and the soft world is you guys, rightly so, you should, what the fuck am I doing? All right. So rightly so, what you guys do is you become the master of the closed loop.
Right.
So here's all these drills and, we were talking about Mid-South and going to Shaw's, which I was fortunate enough to do with a group. And
good old Shaw's. You've been to Shaw's?
Yes,
I have.
So, I mean, there's a situation where you come in, you shoot the standards, they record it, and then you go through all of these different, draw stroke, hey, we want you to do this, this is the evolution. On paper, and now all of a sudden we want to go to like the crazy Indian, or you want to run the facades, or you want to do a million different things, which is really your expression of your skills that you've developed in closed loop, and now you're putting them in a kind of an open loop environment. You think about running two-man facades, shooting out of a car, going tag team, and basically being able to hit targets that you might not be familiar with, but you run it enough frequency that the first time you do it, you don't know what to expect, and it's that closed loop. All of a sudden you run the facade fucking 50 times like we did. All of a sudden now it becomes more of a exercise and technique where I know exactly what my partner's going to going to do. It's kind of like going into a fight. You can spar and you might get into a situation where you're sparring and hey, I know that the guy's supposed to do this. All of a sudden you get into a fight and all of a sudden that sparring is not nearly as valuable.
And that's something that I have a huge disconnect with, like with the three gun world. Like I value the gun world because it's pro Second Amendment, they're learning great firearm mechanics and all these things, but ultimately what you're doing, the comparison between tactical environment, three gun environment is so different because you're mapping out your fields of fire, your structures of fire, your reloads, everything, right? Now, are they proficient with the firearm? Abso-fucking-lutely. And it's super fun to watch some of these girls and guys go out there and run circles around me on the three gun stuff. But it's not in that environment where they learn enough skill sets where you could place them in almost like what you do in the military and soft community, a stress shoot, like here's an environment, participate and be better than everybody else when you don't know what's going on. You're presented with generalities like a shoot or no shoot. You don't know what you're going into. You don't know if there's a fucking couch in front of you, how you're going to enter this room.
Sure. Think about taking that even a step further where now all of a sudden you're in a situation where those targets are actually actively engaging you back.
Absolutely.
And now you have to not only try to engage the target, now you have to move to evade and do this. So, I mean, if you think, it's almost like there's like multi-dimension of the closed loop where now I'm in a situation where I don't know what's presented to me and these targets are popping up left and right. What about all of a sudden if those targets are shooting back and you're putting yourself in a situation? So, I mean, the way I look at it is if we can really break down and understand the components of athleticism, which we really look at as this primal movement patterns and developing primal proficiency, then and we develop the primal proficiency in the closed loop environment. We teach a squat, a step, a lunge, all these different movements. And then once we, challenge posture and position and movement and kind of move through all this and train you to be effective, now you need to go out and fucking challenge this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And which is the difference between athleticism and really fitness, if you think about it. I mean,
right.
CrossFit did a great job in that they made fitness somewhat quantifiable in that they said, hey, fitness is increased work capacity over broad time, modal domains. So now if you can do this amount of work in a shorter amount of time, then you are increasing your fitness. So technically what they did is they tried to quantify fitness and they've done a good job. But I look at fitness as being useful.
Right.
What level of fitness do you need to accomplish the tasks that you need? Now, if it's, hey, I need to fucking sprint fucking 10 yards kick a door in and fucking snatch a motherfucker up and drag him back, then Does your fitness to do that need to equate, I need to run 100 miles? No.
Well, no, that's the big issue and where you see a lot of, soft units that were changing as well because, like, the practical application of fitness is so different on every level.
Fitness is personal.
Yeah, it's not modular. It's
personal. So your level, what you need to do to be useful and accomplish your task, like
why the fuck would I train like a fucking lineman in the NFL? I wouldn't. That would be no usefulness to me at all as a line guy.
But think about this. You would train an offensive lineman the same way I was training you because I would train them to be more athletic.
True.
Because at the end of the day, if I can increase your athleticism and make you a better mover, then you will become a better, more useful tool at what you are trying to use it for. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not going to train a lineman the same way I'm going to train Matt. you know, because at the end of the day, the demands are different.
And
it'd be
a lot of whiskey to get the line.
But I would never, ever do anything that wouldn't fucking foster your athleticism. I would start you in the exact same place. I'd be like, hey, man, let's assess him. Let's see where he's deficient. Now I'm going to fucking fix you and make you a better version of yourself. Because where you start on the continuum is here. I mean, the offensive lineman's going to be fucking dramatically in front of you because he's a fucking NFL player. And, you know, we're like 0.00001% of the population.
It hurts my pride. And I don't think that, but we can go with it.
Wow. Sorry. I mean, dude, I'm just telling you, man, in the last, I think it was the last 20 years, less than 15,000 guys played in the NFL and less than 1,000 played longer than 4 years.
Right.
So you're talking about a pretty small amount of population. Hey,
you know what, John? I'm going to drop some knowledge on you. Less than five have had a podcast that is this big. So you're welcome. You're welcome for our brilliance.
And dude, I'm fucking forever grateful that the Black Rifle ART-15 fucking group has smiled down on me.
Yeah, you should be.
That's so condescending, even in the fucking thank you.
Even in the
thank you. I'm so thankful that the coffee company fucking shirt guy.
You might as well call him the fucking donut shop.
I'm
thankful that the donut shop is as poor as cake.
I was trying to be fucking sincere. That's the problem.
And he looked right through my soul, Ross. Hey, he's like, I'm trying to be sincere. However I try, I'm still a fucking
sociopath. You know what, dude? I'm just a dumb rhetoric major from Berkeley.
I'm just a goddamn dumb guy that went to Berkeley.
I'm just a dumb rhetoric
major.
Tried to get
a goddamn master's.
Hey, and you know what I am? I'm just some goddamn big fucking redneck with a big dumb dick who graduated from Ohio State over here.
Right? Right, Ross? Right?
But I mean, dude, like, if like we could take, I mean, and we will do this. I fucking have no doubt we will do this. If we can take you into a situation where we make you a better mover, we understand efficient movement, and we make you a better version of yourself, then whatever you are applying it to will make you fucking better. And I don't give a fuck if it's race cars,
and Frank,
guns,
Frank.
Fucking whatever it is.
It doesn't matter.
Stay in your fucking closet, boy.
And that's where, like, John and I, we had this fucking fantastic, John, Luke, myself, sitting in my office, right? We had this fucking rad conversation. Where it's like, hey, listen, who are we? What are we trying to accomplish, right? So I'm a 40-year-old dude. I'm a washed-up former fucking action guy, like agency contractor, blah, 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 right? So it's like, great. But what I am right now is I'm a father. But ultimately, what I'm trying to do is train to become proficient to not only provide but defend my family. So just as a man today, that's what I'm trying to accomplish. And I'm no longer like carrying a carbine for a living, but I still want to be fit. I still want to be able to like walk a fucking mile and a half, but I have like these nagging injuries, right? So I've broken my back. I've got fucking Achilles tendonitis. I've got patella tendonitis. I've got fucking both elbows tendonitis. Like I've worn my fucking body to the point where you can't really say, okay, I'm not an NFL lineman, but ultimately what I've done is I've had to suck it up.
No, but here's the thing, dude. You can learn because, I mean, dude, nobody's more, I mean, you're fucking broken and you remind me of the small little Marine in Avatar being carried around by the big blue Avatar. Thank you. I just want to carry you because I want to be the big Avatar.
That was overtly, ambiguously homosexual.
That's actually kind of
I just want to distill you into a little teapot and drink you for lunch.
Just want to drink you and fucking
dude, it's kind of an inside joke in that somebody asked me, they're like, how do you see yourself? I'm like, you remember the small Boken Marine in Avatar? That's how I see myself. And like the fucking people were like, what? And I'm like, don't worry about it.
Stolen valor. Yeah. He's called submarine.
Don't worry about it.
Stolen valor.
fucking stolen flag. No, and but like, you know, as somebody, but here's the fucking thing that drives me absolutely crazy is you have a mileage, but it doesn't mean that you can't still train with intensity and volume in all these ways. You just have to find a more creative way to do it. And the problem is that the conventional methods and the conventional tools offered to you are fucking antiquated.
Yeah.
So like, you know, for example, what I would do for you is one thing we'd figure out is a couple things. I'd fucking take you up the street to Dr. Bueller's place and let him fucking balance you out. And then we'd fire up and use some like power dot, like EMS type units to try to get some motor unit recruitment. And at which point, if we wanted to try to ramp up some volume and try to fix some stuff, we'd use like some blood flow restricted training with some KAATSU and just find some ways for you to train, which allow you to keep driving adaptation. And we just have to reach outside the conventional fucking system. The problem is most people fucking stop the conversation at this fence. And I'm like, yeah, let's blow up that wall and let's get the fuck through it. Because there's more technology and there's more information available in terms of training. The problem is people just don't understand it and they don't understand how to fucking use this stuff.
saying in kind of like a dumb term for us because he's sounding very articulated, like anal sex, it's going to hurt the first time. You shouldn't just stop.
Yeah.
Push through it, break down that boundary.
Push through it.
But if you're having anal and the person shits themselves, it's just going to lube it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's
the
problem.
Oh, boy.
There's a cross-reference of males sitting here, right? To include Jared, who's a sandwich-eating fucking shitbag.
Boy.
However,
Let's let a sleeping dog lie. Let's get to the drinking bro of the week. Are we going there already? Yeah, Evan, we've been going for a goddamn hour. Yeah, we're going there already. What do you want to do? Avatar? All three movies?
Yes.
So the drinking bro of the week is submitted by Matthew Gillespie. He says he'd like to make a request that his dad is actually the drinking bro of the week. His name is Brian Gillespie. He's been a volunteer firefighter for 33 years. He's gotten a couple of awards for his heroism, and he was unaware until now. He's a mechanic at Carner Machinery in Salem, Virginia, and has been one for 20-some-odd years. He loves the podcast, loves Range 15, listens to the podcast every single morning on the drive to work, and I think it'd be super cool if his name was announced while he was on his way to work. Guess what, Matthew Gillespie? Your dad was. Thank you to Brian Gillespie for listening to the show every day.
What was his dad's name?
Brian is his name.
Brian Gillespie.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it.
The son is Matthew Gillespie. And yeah, man, fuck. Father and son listen to the show. We really appreciate it. And this was an awesome one. People helping people.
It's powerful stuff.
People helping people. Frank's helping Frank's in the closet. And on this show, Evan Hafer, thank you for joining us. Mr. Matt Best, our special guest from the NFL, John. John, thank you for being here. We appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Former.
Do you ever leave?
What was your podcast again? Sorry,
do you ever leave? What was your
podcast again? We do Power Athlete Radio, which is the premier podcast in strength conditioning.
Fuck yeah.
Absolutely. And look, for all the kids at home who are listening, thinking about how can we get some new teas, go to drinkingbrospodcast.com. Tell them Ross Patterson sent you. We are out of here. Good night, everybody. We love you.
Night.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.